Welcome to episode 8 of Vaccines Revealed. I'm Dr. Patrick Gentempo, and today we have part 3 of our interview with Dr. Brian Hooker. And if you watch the other episodes with Brian Hooker, it's like a cliffhanger about the story, how it's unfolding with the CDC and all the malfeasance there. So you don't want to miss this installment of our interview with Dr. Brian Hooker. Also, we have a completely unique thing today. We have the worldwide online free premiere of Trace Amounts, the entire movie. The mission, the purpose, and the production value of this movie is incredible. It's breathtaking. You have to see this movie and know what it contains, because it is critical to your understanding about vaccines and mercury in the environment. Enjoy this episode. In your conversations with Dr. Thompson, the autism issue wasn't the only issue that came out. There was an issue about mercury and ticks. Can you speak to what that whole scenario was?
It's very interesting. When you go to CDC's website, and they have a specific website on thimerosal and thimerosal exposure, what they report is that there is no incidence of harm and that there's no harm caused by thimerosal except for occasional redness and swelling at the injection site. Mm-hmm. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we don't have to go to independent literature to find that out. We go to CDC's literature. Thompson wrote a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2007, and he looked at neurotypical kids. These are kids with no developmental delays, no maladies. Their ages were somewhere between 6 and 10, I believe. And what they did is they split the group into a high exposure group that had a lot of thimerosal in their infant vaccines and a low exposure group that had a lesser amount of thimerosal. And they looked at all of these different psychological and neurological battery tests. And what they found was a very, very profound difference in the number of boys that had ticks in the high thimerosal group versus the numbers of boys that had ticks in the low thimerosal group.
It was statistically significant.
It was statistically significant. The relative risk was above 2.0, which means that it would argue in a court of law. So boys that were receiving the lion's share of thimerosal in their vaccines were at least twice as likely to have ticks and show ticks. Evaluated by an independent professional. This isn't just due to parental reporting, but an independent professional who's trained to see these types of issues was observing these children over a three-hour period. And those that exhibited ticks, again, the high thimerosal group had a lot more ticks in boys than the low thimerosal group. The study that they didn't do, they didn't have a no thimerosal control.
Wow.
Okay, so you could imagine that if you had a control that wasn't exposed to mercury at all, that the difference would probably be even more profound.
Wow.
Okay. Not only the Thompson study that came out in 2007, but the Verstraten study that the CDC used to bury the connection between vaccines and autism had a corollary, and it basically said that in one of the HMOs tested, they showed a strong relationship, statistically significant, again, between thimerosal exposure and ticks. The CDC had a hand in a UK study. They were actually ultimately responsible for the funding decision for the UK study, where they came out in 2004 that also showed a relationship again between thimerosal and ticks. And this time they looked at boys and girls together. They didn't separate them out, but it was statistically significant. Add on to that, another study that Thompson did, he was extremely emphatic that thimerosal was causing ticks, especially in boys. And so he did another study in 2012 that was published with a graduate student by the name of Jack Baril. And again, a strong statistically significant relationship between thimerosal and ticks in boys. And what he described was this systematic watering down of any result that he had. If there was a statistically...
When you say he described it, do you mean to you on the phone or...
He described it to me on the phone, and he also shared documentation where there were memos written about his paper specifically on why he should not publish the result on thimerosal and ticks. A chief CDC official, his name was Ed Trevithan, who was in the National Immunization Program, basically came down hard on Thompson and said, you will not publish this result unless you can have a ticks expert verify the result. And basically what Dr. Trevithan was trying to do was trying to dissuade Thompson from publishing the result in the first place. He wanted it in the background. He wanted it never to see the light of day.
And if you're called upon, you have the documentation to support what you're asserting right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have the documentation. I also have a Dr. Tanya Popovic, who used to be the associate director for science for the entire CDC. She was like one of the number two in the second tier, directly below the CDC director, who said that what Thompson had to do was emphasize the non-statistically significant relationships, those things that showed that thimerosal wasn't a clear, and downplay those few relationships that showed that thimerosal was causing harm.
So top-level officials at the CDC directed him to downplay the relationship that he was observing in his research.
That is correct. And it was so transparent that Dr. Thompson, with his 2012 paper, he went to the Journal of the American Medical Association, tried to get it published there. It was the reception that he got from the peer reviewers was laughable. They basically said, look, when CDC tries to find it, sees a relationship that they don't like, they try to downplay it. They try to do everything in their power, basically, to convince the public that this isn't a true statistically significant relationship, even though it is.
So the peer reviewers saw that the paper was attempting to water it down, and they basically said, we're not buying it.
They're not publishing it. So they had to go to a second-tier journal in order to get that research published. The Journal of the American Medical Association basically called foul on the CDC.
Wow. Now, in your recorded conversations with Thompson, do you talk about this mercury issue and ticks? And does he talk about what happened?
Not only do we talk about the relationship between mercury and ticks, but he also wanted me to launch a campaign basically using CDC science against them, showing, hey, there are four publications that have CDC direct ties that show that mercury causes ticks in boys. Why is thimerosal still in the flu shot?
So if you were to interpret the dynamics of the circumstance, basically this guy is having private conversations, when I say this person, Dr. Thompson, is having private conversations with you, and he's saying, they are not letting me reveal what I have found in my research. Can you please get that data and get it out to the world? So do you see he was having, or do you feel like he was having an issue of conscience trying to do the right thing, even though he was in an environment that wouldn't permit it?
Absolutely. He wanted the truth to be revealed. He wanted the truth to be revealed regarding mercury and ticks. He wanted the truth to be revealed regarding the MMR and autism. And the day that my paper was published, that MMR paper was published, he said, he called me up and he said, you have vindicated me. The results are out. He figuratively breathed a sigh of relief that this thing that he had been hiding for all those years, since 2001, was finally brought into the forefront and it was actually published. And so it was a crisis of conscience for Dr. Thompson. He tried to alert chief CDC officials about these relationships, and he was shut down summarily. And instead of anybody, including all the way to the top, the CDC director at the time was Dr. Julie Gerberding, shut him directly down. And instead, they made it an issue of his psychological state and said, look, he's unstable. HR recommended that he get counseling. Wow. Did he see a counseling psychologist? And that's traditionally what the CDC does. If somebody falls out of line and is not spewing the party line of the CDC, then they become a personnel problem.
And what does the CDC say on their signature and their emails? Saving lives, protecting people. Saving lives, protecting people. That's their moniker, yet there's now documentary evidence that they're doing exactly the opposite of that. And then when somebody mentally breaks down because they have an issue of conscience, as a scientist who's charged, you know, with finding the truth and can't reveal it, they now think that, you know, they need counseling.
They need counseling. These are crazy people. So instead of saving lives and protecting people, it's saving programs and protecting profits.
Ooh.
Exactly. That is what they're trying to do. People need to understand the CDC functions as a for-profit company. They are taking money, taxpayer dollars. They're buying vaccines. They're distributing those vaccines to the state public health department, and then they're getting reimbursed for that distribution. If vaccine rates fall off, CDC loses money.
I never could have imagined that at the age of 33, this is where I would be in life. It all seems like one giant blur to me, how everything happened, how I got here. After experiencing everything I have seen, everything I have heard, and everything I have felt, I wish more than anything that I could go back in time and stop this tragedy from the day it started. It was on September 13th, 1931, that Virginia S. was born. Hoover was in office, and we were still trying to recover from the Great Depression. It wouldn't be until 12 years later, in 1943, that she would become the oldest of the first 11 children ever diagnosed with autism. The world had no idea what was about to come.
A dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
Where were all of the children with autism throughout this time? Years kept passing by as if they were in fast forward. But it was almost as if the condition autism was in a deep sleep and couldn't be awakened.
All we are saying
history would give us many opportunities to learn from our mistakes, if only our eyes had been open. But time wasn't waiting for us to learn any lessons. In 1988, the movie Rain Man would be the first to finally introduce the general public to the word autism.
What, is he crazy?
No.
Is he retarded?
Not exactly.
He's not crazy, he's not retarded, but he's here.
Well, he's an autistic savant.
I don't know what that means.
Well, some people like him used to be called idiot savants. They have certain deficiencies, certain abilities.
Yeah, but he's retarded.
Autistic.
People were hearing the word autism for the first time and struggling to understand what it meant. Even though a child psychologist by the name of Leo Kanner had discovered autism almost 5 decades earlier, it would remain so rare through this entire period that it was simply never talked about. But that was about to change very quickly, when thousands of families' lives were soon to be turned upside down.
To end our week of autism coverage, we're going to tell you about one group of very young children being classified on the autism spectrum at what some say is an alarming rate.
By the end of this newscast, one more person will be diagnosed with autism.
The numbers are going up so quickly, something has to be done.
The numbers are staggering, and there's so much fear about autism. There's so much misinformation about autism.
The autism epidemic is on the brink of entering a brand new chapter.
These numbers represent a staggering 57% increase.
That is more new pediatric cases than AIDS, diabetes, and cancer combined.
Combined for pediatric cases.
We need this entire globe to come in and find the cure because this is a global epidemic.
New numbers from the CDC showing one child in 68 has autism.
That means about 1 million children in the United States are now diagnosed with autism.
How could this have possibly happened?
He was definitely spinning anything and everything. You know, you give him a sippy cup to drink from, he'd turn it on its side and spin it. You gave him a plate, he would spin it. I mean, anything.
He'd go up to an office chair and just spin it. He was really hypersensitive to sounds. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd get in the car and the radio would be on and he'd say his name and he doesn't look up, he doesn't acknowledge it, and it's like, what, you know, why are you ignoring me? What?
Where'd he
hello?
Go?
No recognition of his peers, no interest in his peers.
His receptive language was completely gone. He didn't point at anything. He didn't try to get my attention to share things with me. I mean, he was just checked out. Picked up a book on autism, and I read about a paragraph, and I knew. And I knew that's what we were dealing with. And I was like, wow.
Forget college. It's, you know, it'll be a miracle if he ever speaks.
Yeah. I really sincerely believe that the vaccines were a part of his becoming ill and the autism.
Is there a link between childhood vaccines and autism?
A study of 1,000 kids that did not show a link.
Autism-like symptoms after receiving 5 vaccinations in one day.
The reason that doctors in this country are frustrated, because, listen, all you're doing is you're antagonizing a...
For over a decade now, many doctors and scientists and even parents have been in a raging debate about whether or not childhood vaccines are causing autism. It all began in 1998 when Dr. Andrew Wakefield published a paper merely hinting at a link between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and autism. He would end up learning the hard way never to question the vaccine program.
Breaking news tonight, just hours ago, the British medical journal BMJ did something extremely rare for a scientific journal. It accused a researcher, Andrew Wakefield, of outright fraud.
Others have come along claiming it's specific ingredients in the vaccines that are causing autism. And even others are now claiming it's just too many vaccines given too soon.
Too soon!
Vaccines, I would argue, are the safest, best-tested things that we put into our body. Obviously, nothing is absolutely safe.
It's got to be the vaccines. It's the only thing, you know, that went up in all 50 states at the same time.
I don't think it's any longer possible to say there was no evidence of any association between vaccines and autism.
Many studies have now been done that have showed there is absolutely no relationship between any vaccinations and autism.
It's unquestionably environmental. The science points to vaccines.
We've proven it's not the vaccines. It's really time to look elsewhere for the causes of autism.
Controversial subject, Nancy.
Not controversial subject.
Well, but controversial for parents who still
it
believe.
It is not controversial, Matt. It's time for kids to get their vaccines.
If it weren't controversial, you wouldn't be ambushed.
No, it's not controversial. I mean, I really mean that. The science is the science.
Vaccines are used in the fight against infectious diseases. And many are concerned that without them, we would risk the return of diseases such as polio and smallpox. But there is one theory in the vaccine autism debate that is not questioning the vaccines themselves. It questions the mercury-based preservative, thimerosal.
Thimerosal, it's an antiseptic preservative, and hasn't that been linked in some cases to autism?
Thimerosal was invented by the pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly in the 1920s.
Thimerosal doesn't make the vaccine more effective, it's just simply a preservative.
It is only added to vaccines, so pharmaceutical companies can be lazy and unsterile during their manufacturing and have a very cheap option to give vaccine shelf life.
And having an adequate supply of vaccine is very important.
Okay, well, let me follow up on that then. Single-shot vials, does that need thimerosal?
No, they don't, but there
are a lot why don't we have single-shot vials?
There are a lot of manufacturing issues associated with switching over. You need much more filling capacity for the lines.
You have all the benefit of vaccine without using mercury. Mercury has always been an option.
And even though other options are available, the incredible risk of using thimerosal is taken solely because it's the cheapest. So this theory has nothing to do with the greater good. It has everything to do with the greater greed.
In 3 separate cases, a special federal court ruled that thimerosal, a vaccine preservative containing mercury, does not cause autism.
Thimerosal was found to be in vaccines at levels far above all mercury exposure guidelines. And 3 of the test cases in what was called the Omnibus Autism Proceeding would represent thousands of parents from the stance that thimerosal had caused their children's autism.
For families to be compensated, all they had to prove was that it is possible thimerosal was to blame. And still, that argument fell short.
The judgment read loud and clear. Thimerosal does not cause autism. except for when it does.
The government conceded liability in the case of Hannah Poehling, who's now kind of the poster child for the movement.
Question is, did childhood vaccines cause a 9-year-old girl from Georgia her autism symptoms? Did they cause it?
Over 2 years before the omnibus judgment was made, this same court system had already quietly awarded and replaced Hannah Poehling as a potential thimerosal test case.
One of the most disturbing things about this case is that the government did in fact settle, but now the case has been sealed.
I think the reason they conceded Hannah Poehling was so that the records would be sealed and no one would be the wiser.
Back in 1999, 8 years before the Hannah Poehling case, the Centers for Disease Control had run their initial analysis of thimerosal and found a major association with autism. Transcripts from a secret meeting in 2000 to address these findings were very clear regarding one of their concerns. Then, just over a year later, as we all witnessed a national tragedy, others saw this as an opportunity.
There are a lot of tough decisions that will be made as we develop and discuss and debate how to move forward.
In November of 2002, Congress passed the Homeland Security Bill, which created the Homeland Security Department. And the whole country woke up the next morning and it was reported that late at night, right before the bill was passed, somebody had slipped in a secret rider that would have dismissed all lawsuits against Eli Lilly and other vaccine companies for having put this mercury-based preservative in vaccines.
The exact day the Homeland Security Act was signed, the White House had the Justice Department file a motion to seal all documents related to hundreds of claims that thimerosal and vaccines had caused autism.
It was the most ridiculous motion ever filed in federal court. And under pressure, the Bush administration quickly withdrew that.
These deceptive acts were raising red flags everywhere. But there is so much more to the thimerosal story.
They made a lot of mistakes. And there's a lot of documents they don't want you to see.
A story that spans over 8 decades.
Why did you start researching autism?
I got a tetanus shot on my 29th birthday, which is back in 2004. I got extremely sick, and I just wanted to forget it and just put it behind me and move on. And then the more I started watching news, you know, I would see all over the place where they were linking the word thimerosal with autism. Like, why are they connecting this word thimerosal, which I knew I just got devastated by, with this condition, this childhood condition, autism? So at that time, I realized, okay, it's time to start looking into the word autism.
He basically just, like, woke up like a different person. Like, he went out one night with his friends and, sorry.
On February 29th, 2004, I woke up in a whole new world. The very first thing I remember was going to the bathroom and everything sounding so loud. I went back to bed thinking I could just sleep it off. But there was so much noise inside my head that I was not able to sleep at all that day or that night. And by the next morning, I knew something was very wrong. I had no idea what was about to come.
Result of all this, going on tour, getting people together to help you make this.
For people to finally understand what autism is and how it got started and how it became an epidemic and what's caused it, the public needs to understand what's happened here because the public will drive the change.
The first thing to note about thimerosal was it was patented by Eli Lilly scientists in 1927. So Eli Lilly did an experiment on humans. There was an epidemic of meningitis in Indianapolis. And Eli Lilly's in Indianapolis, Indiana. 144 people came down with bacterial meningitis infections of the brain. And what Eli Lilly did is took a subgroup of those people and they exposed them to thimerosal, extremely high doses. It was a 1% solution. So they were giving doses to humans of thimerosal that were killing animals in the laboratory. They gave it to them intravenously, and of the 22 people, all of them died. based on experience of giving these doses of thimerosal to these 22 persons, they said that thimerosal or methylate, they're the same thing, had a very low order of toxicity for man.
That is the only safety study ever done on thimerosal, is that he told them that it was safe when he gave it to 22 people, all of whom died, most of whom died within a day.
We were wondering if there's somebody we could talk to regarding the history behind like thimerosal and the whole controversy behind it. Is there somebody we could talk to about that?
Behind what now?
Pittman Moore bought thimerosal from Eli Lilly as a preservative for dogs. And what they found out, this is 1935, we have a letter that they wrote back to Eli Lilly where they stated that it caused so many reactions in the dogs that they said it was unsuitable for use in dogs. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of studies from the early 1930s through the present that have called into question the use of thimerosal in every single kind of product.
And a particularly interesting one was in 1948, there were so many complaints that the AMA, the August American Medical Association, put together a blue ribbon panel to study what they should do and recommend about all these complaints that were published in the literature. And Frank B. Ingley was on that committee, who's still alive today, and you maybe get to talk to him. We may have seen him.
We found out that the thimerosal would be toxic down to not grams, not milligrams, not micrograms, but nanograms, parts per billion, which was almost unbelievable. And this was published in the American Journal Medical Society, in the New York Academy of Sciences, and in the journal from the Chemical Specialties Manufacturers Association, and it didn't make a wave. There wasn't a ripple. No one seemed to care.
I'll just make sure that someone calls you back regarding what they have information-wise, okay?
Excellent. I appreciate that.
Mercury is one of the most toxic elements on the planet, much more toxic than lead. 2 parts per billion is the Environmental Protection Agency's limit in drinking water. 200 parts per billion is the level in liquid the EPA classifies as hazardous waste. 50,000 parts per billion is the concentration of mercury in most thimerosal-containing vaccines.
Society has put in place several institutions to take care of kids. First is the FDA. They're supposed to license vaccines, affirmatively prove they're safe. They have failed. The second institution, CDC, is supposed to mandate vaccines, again, based on safety and need. They have failed. The third group to protect kids is the doctors, the American Academy of Pediatrics. They have failed, partly because they can't be sued, partly because they're bought off by industry and government contracts. The fourth group, industry, they're normally responsible for ensuring safety because they can be sued if they make an unsafe product. They're off the hook, too.
Frank Ingley's studies in the 40s and 50s confirms that thimerosal is not effective as a preservative and extremely neurotoxic. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1967 study in applied microbiology finds that thimerosal killed mice when added to vaccines. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1977 study reports 10 of 13 infants treated with thimerosal for umbilical cord infections die of mercury toxicity. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1983 study concludes that not only is thimerosal extremely toxic to cells, but it is also capable of changing cell properties. Eli Lilly does nothing. A study in 1986 finds that thimerosal has the strongest irreversible lethal effect. Our own CDC, FDA, and AAP remain completely asleep at the wheel, allowing Eli Lilly to continue doing nothing.
When I was a little boy, we only got 3 vaccines. But my children, 5 of my 6 children, got 22 vaccines. Beginning in 1989, that's the thimerosal generation. That's the vaccine generation. And it's the sickest generation in the history of this country.
During the exact 5 decades that autism remained asleep at 1 in 10,000, children would receive 4 DTP shots, totaling 100 micrograms of mercury. But between 1989 and 1992, the levels of mercury would be increased, and the autism rates would start rising.
We added a new vaccine to our schedule, HIB, Haemophilus influenza B, which is a terrible disease, and I think it's really important to vaccinate against that. But that, too, contained 25 micrograms of mercury, and that was a series of 4 shots. So now we're up to 200 micrograms exposure. And then they added the hepatitis B vaccine, 3 shots, 12 and a half micrograms each.
You expect that the drug companies would make sure that those vaccines are safe, and you have trust. Unfortunately, most people have trust that the vaccine companies are looking out for the safety of your children, but apparently that's not always the case.
Why aren't they asking CDC, why don't you study the Amish? You know, why don't you study these homeschool kids? 30,000 homeschool kids studied by the UPI and no autism in that group. So we know what the truth is, and these mothers know what made their child sick.
Where are you guys from?
Los Angeles.
Great.
So we're doing our documentary specifically on autism. Do you know anybody with autism in the Amish community?
No, not that I know. No.
Well, most Amish people don't want to vaccinate. Now, the reason they don't want to vaccinate is because they feel like they don't want to do anything to stand in the way of the will of God.
Well, one of the first questions I had when I started on this was simply, what is the autism rate in never vaccinated kids versus vaccinated kids?
Have you ever known an Amish child with autism?
I've never known any of our people or our children with autism, no.
Are there any Amish children in this practice that have autism or similar features to autism?
Not that I know of.
I came to the anecdotal conclusion that there were very few Amish kids with autism. I wrote a story in April 2005 called The Amish Anomaly, where I tried to lay this out and also to suggest that it was very anecdotal and that the only purpose in bringing it up was that there was a possible group here that could be studied.
What other conditions do you see right now? I mean, do you know anybody with diabetes?
Yeah, there are diabetes Amish, yeah.
What about like multiple sclerosis or Alzheimer's and...
We're humans.
Dan Olmsted called me in, it was about September of 2006, and he told me that he heard about us. We have no autism in our practice. You know, there may be a couple of cases that we don't know about, but with 30 or 40,000 children we've taken care of, it would be inconceivable that we didn't know of 50, 75, or 100 cases. And since the majority of these children are not vaccinated, there's very strong evidence that there's a connection between autism and something about the vaccine program.
I think that the public health officials have been too quick to dismiss the hypothesis as irrational.
Dr. Bernadine Healy was the former head of the National Institutes of Health. She stood up against her own colleagues and said they are deliberately avoiding this research because they are afraid of what they might find.
There may be the susceptible group. The fact that there is concern that you don't want to know that susceptible group is a real disappointment to me.
At first, I really didn't know what to think of it all. I just knew that something was really wrong because he just really changed.
I felt like I woke up that day in a world that was way too loud. I immediately started seeing ear doctors who would quickly diagnose me with severe sensitivity to noise, but not one of them could figure out why.
Like, can you hear that? And you'd constantly say that to me, can you hear that?
We were sitting in this very quiet restaurant, and we were sitting at the table after dinner, and Eric says, do you hear that noise? And it was bothering him, it was just really bothering him. And we already knew that he was having some issues. And it turned out to be was a blooming coffee pot, I think, that was back behind just making coffee. It was just making a little noise. We couldn't even hear it.
Over the next several weeks, I became very sensitive to light, and my vision became distorted with tracers. Many of the muscles and nerves in my head, face, and neck were becoming so tense that I was unable to relax them. I started seeing ear, nose, and throat doctors and other specialists trying to get some type of answer. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't focus at work, and I could no longer ignore disturbing psychological symptoms that were starting to make me very scared.
He kept telling me he felt like he was going crazy and he didn't know what to do about it.
I was desperately hoping this would all be over soon. But everything was just getting started.
Art.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Dr. Mark Geyer and his son David both believe mercury is the cause of autism. But the many studies they have published linking mercury to autism have been picked apart by the medical community. They have also been highly scrutinized for attempting to recover these children with treatments that many consider dangerous.
Got him.
Regardless if the Geyers are right or not, they have both played a pivotal role in this issue for years now.
Children are receiving large doses of mercury at intervals that far exceed all the federal agency guidelines, and not by fivefold, but by over 100-fold.
In 1971, Dr. Mark Geyer was featured in Time magazine, the New York Times, and Newsweek for a medical breakthrough that was almost deemed revolutionary. But the times have changed. Once known as brilliant, many are now calling him a quack because of a stance on mercury and autism.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, maybe we can talk about this on camera. I think, you know, it's the good thing about science is it's really independent of scientists. I mean, good science stands and bad science doesn't. The Geyer's science hasn't stood.
Dr. Paul Offit is the national expert from the side that claims mercury does not cause autism. Yet he has no expertise in either autism or mercury toxicity. His only expertise in this subject lies in his conflicts of interest.
Why isn't it a conflict of interest?
Because as I sit on the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices and make recommendations for children in this country, the only thing I consider is exactly how I would treat my own children.
Dr. Offit holds a $1.5 million research chair at Children's Hospital funded by Merck. He holds the patent on an anti-diarrhea vaccine he developed with Merck. Dr. Offit's share of vaccine profits, unknown.
Ask Dr. Offit what studies he's done.
Yeah.
He hasn't done a study. I mean, at least if you talk to one of the guys that did a study, maybe you don't agree with the study. But he doesn't have any studies.
You've had a definitive test, as far as I'm concerned, regarding thimerosal safety. I mean, that study that Bill Thompson performed at the CDC in 2007 that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine was a wonderful study.
The lead author of this study is a senior CDC scientist who for over a decade now has played a major role within the CDC to disprove a link between vaccines and autism.
I think that stands as a definitive study.
The Thompson study was not done on any children with autism or autism spectrum disorder. They eliminated those that were most likely to be vulnerable to thimerosal damage before the study even started.
They're not doing what they should be doing.
Right.
They're afraid to look for things that might be associated.
I was just sitting at my desk preparing for lecture, and my cell phone rang, and it was Bill Thompson.
I see that on the New England Journal of Medicine paper, you were pressured to downplay the relationship between thimerosal and ticks.
Well, let me just say this. I did a follow-up study because I wanted my opinion on the record.
There was a definitive statistically significant association between thimerosal and ticks.
Ticks are like five times as common among kids with autism.
He said, you've got to understand, When the CDC sees a vaccine adverse association that they don't want to report, they put a bunch of scientists in a room together and they work for hours and hours until they can get that association to go away. And that's almost a verbatim quote of what he told me.
I shoulder that the CDC has put the research 10 years behind, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the CDC has not been transparent, we've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now by anything related to autism.
Something is just horribly wrong within the CDC.
Jump it. Right.
There's probably not a real increase in autism as much as there is a real increase in diagnosis and a real increase in awareness that's what's going on.
Show me where all the 30, 40-year-old autistics running around right now if we're not in the middle of an epidemic.
When I first started in 71, you didn't hear autism. The last 20 years, we've seen a higher rise, not just the learning symptoms, but the fact that they can't control their anxiety, their anger. They can't control themselves. The teachers want to know, why is this happening so much now? What is going on?
Everyone knows genetics can't cause an epidemic. Genetic susceptibility can, but you have to have the toxin. There's a lot of discussion about the video from the University of Calgary. They were going to look at snail neurons in culture because they're big. You can see them with a microscope and you can film them. And they decided to add compounds, metals, to these neurons to see if it had any effect that you could observe. And what they observed was exactly what we saw in the live animal, that mercury and only mercury caused the tubulin to disintegrate.
The EPA guideline for mercury, this is actually technically for methylmercury orally ingested, is 0.1 micrograms of mercury per kilogram body weight per day.
Between 1989 and 1992, the amount of mercury children were getting in their vaccines had over doubled.
The quantity of mercury, that's ethyl mercury, that's contained in vaccines is actually not that much.
Per this new schedule, a baby with an average weight of 6 pounds on the day of birth would be exposed to 46 times over the mercury guideline. At 2 months, the same baby would weigh around 10 pounds and receive 138 times the guideline. This baby would have to weigh almost 1,400 pounds to be within the federal guideline. The same baby at 4 months is exposed to 79 times over the guideline. At 6 months, 86 times over the guideline. At 12 months, 55 times over the guideline. And to top it all off, this guideline is fatally flawed.
That guideline deals with methylmercury, number one. And it deals with methylmercury given by mouth.
The guideline is based off eating fish, which is methylmercury. Thimerosal in vaccines is an injection of ethylmercury. A 2012 Italian study concluded thimerosal in vaccines was 50 times more toxic to cells than methylmercury in fish. And this study didn't even take into account other factors.
When you eat a methylmercury-containing fish, your body doesn't absorb all of it. When you inject an ethylmercury-containing vaccine, it's 100% absorption.
Dr. Tom Burbacher performed an experiment on monkeys to compare injecting thimerosal to eating methylmercury.
Whatever process that's going on in terms of moving the mercury from the body to the brain is actually happening a little bit faster with the thimerosal.
Both ethyl and methyl can wash in and out of the brain, but over time they convert into an inorganic form, which locks into the brain and accumulates. And ethyl would do this much faster than methyl.
The first time that we looked at the thimerosal animals, majority of it was already inorganic.
In the end, the thimerosal-exposed monkeys had twice the amount of inorganic mercury locked in their brain. Burbacher in previous studies found neuroinflammation in the brain directly associated with this inorganic form of mercury.
The 0.1 microgram per kilogram per day is not a good standard for ethyl mercury.
It wouldn't be until 1998 that the FDA would be forced to do the math and calculate how much mercury children were getting in their vaccines.
CDC was asked in 1998 by Congress in a law called the FDA Modernization Act. Congress asked them to add up the mercury in medicine to see how high it was.
And in the case of vaccines, it fell to Leslie Ball, a medical doctor at the FDA, and what she found was that the amount of mercury in the childhood vaccine schedule exceeded all the federal safety guidelines. This particular material came to the attention of Dr. Neil Halsey.
Neil Halsey, I worked for the American Academy of Pediatrics at the time, was in charge of making vaccine decisions. And he is quoted as saying, and he actually was seen crying, saying that if he had known how to calculate how many micrograms there was in a shot, he would have stopped it long ago.
Curtis Allen, please. Yeah, we've been kind of playing phone tag.
Neil Halsey developed the position, and it was the hardline position, that we got to get rid of mercury right now.
I don't know what to do at this point, because we're scheduled to leave today, but... And he was supposed to call me back like 2 days ago.
The CDC response was, no, we do not want to remove mercury from the vaccines. And the thought behind this is that they were afraid to label some vaccines good and others bad. American Academy of Pediatrics, Neil Halsey, and then it was John Abramson, said that this is unacceptable. I mean, that we can't tolerate this, we're not going to leave. And if you persist in this, they said that they were going to issue a press release by themselves recommending not giving vaccines to children, that we have to delay these shots.
The director of vaccine research within the FDA wrote an email to the FDA's senior advisor for communication. The calculations done by FDA are not complex. I'm not sure if there will be an easy way out of the potential perception that the FDA, CDC, and immunization policy bodies may have been asleep at the switch regarding thimerosal until now.
This was the big one. They had blown what you could not blow in vaccines. They'd allowed children to be exposed to toxic levels of mercury.
What resulted was a joint statement by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the United States Public Health Service stating that thimerosal-containing vaccines should be removed as soon as possible. But not only would they not be recalled, they would continue to manufacture these vaccines until 2001, and the CDC would push for the abundance of backstock to be administered to children well up until around 2003, just before they would do the unthinkable.
He was going to lots of doctors. None of them come up with anything, and he still has these symptoms.
New symptoms were now kicking in daily, and within a couple weeks, I had numbness and burning in different areas. I had a rash over my entire back. My coordination, gait, balance, and fine motor skills were all messed up. I had muscle weakness and twitching all over and body parts tremoring.
It wasn't easy for me at all to see him in that state. All I wanted to do was get him better and to see him be able to enjoy life again.
I came across mercury poisoning while researching my symptoms. But where would I have been exposed to mercury? After several weeks of running every test in the book, there were still no answers.
Every little symptom that he had, he just really started to research and start trying to put them together.
I walked backwards in time, identifying symptoms such as dizziness and shakiness and other symptoms that had started even in the weeks before my ear symptoms.
It was kind of like the stars, almost aligned.
My symptoms led me back to my 29th birthday. This was the exact day everything had started.
We were building a fence in our backyard, and he had knelt down to pick up something and scraped his head with a rusty nail.
I got a tetanus shot within an hour of scratching my head on that nail. I sat up to my laptop and typed four words into Google, and I hit enter.
He came to me and was remember when I got that tetanus shot?
I pulled out the waiver I signed before getting that shot, and I couldn't believe my eyes. There was mercury in it, an amount where I would have to weigh 551 pounds to be within the federal guideline.
Now he knew what he had, but he wanted to know why.
But the answer to why would have to wait, because my physical symptoms were about to be surpassed by something far worse.
Now, most people have no idea that there's aluminum in the vaccine. Many investigators, particularly Dr. Boyd Haley, have shown that aluminum and mercury are synergistic in their action and extremely toxic, much more than 1 + 1, which is something that many people have never considered.
We did the study with neurons in culture, added aluminum, and found aluminum was only slightly neurotoxic by itself, and that thimerosal was significantly toxic by itself. But when you put the two together, at one point in the dying of the neurons, when you had 10% death with the thimerosal alone, you had over 60% death with the thimerosal plus aluminum. So the aluminum definitely enhances the toxicity of thimerosal.
The material and safety data sheet for thimerosal clearly states that thimerosal should never be combined with aluminum. It reads, violent reactions possible with aluminum. So when the FDA finally did the math that alarmed so many, they neglected to include three major variables into their equation. Ethyl mercury injected with aluminum. Imagine what the math would have shown then.
We would insist that mercury be removed and replaced. If in doubt, take the mercury out.
After the AAP's joint statement in 1999, the CDC decided to study the Vaccine Safety Data Link, known as the VSD, which is a large database of medical records used to monitor vaccine side effects.
Robert Chen, who was the guru of the Vaccine Safety Data Link, he was the one who set it up, volunteered the Vaccine Safety Data Link as a way to basically affirm the fact that thimerosal was safe in the vaccines, and they would do studies in the VSD to prove it.
Around October, November of 1999, there was a young researcher who was visiting for a while to work for about a year or so at the CDC named Thomas Verstraeten. He was an epidemiologist from Belgium. And they said, run the numbers, Tom. See what you can find. We saw five different permutations of this study appear over a period of 4 years. So the very first generation was when Thomas Verstraeten took all the kids, and he took kids who received 25 micrograms or more by 1 month of age, and kids who received 25 micrograms or under 25 micrograms, in many cases no mercury at all, by 1 month of age. And then he just compared their outcomes. And that's when he found these extremely elevated risks.
A relative risk is the risk of developing a disease relative to an exposure. For example, relative risk of 2 would mean that a child has 2 times the chance of developing autism when exposed to thimerosal compared to a child who was not exposed to thimerosal. Verstraeten's first generation of findings consisted of 2 different analyses, one in November and another in December of 1999. In his November analysis, he found a relative risk of 7.62 for autism. Dr. Sander Greenland is a world-renowned epidemiologist at UCLA in Los Angeles, California.
So from a relative risk standpoint, 7.62 would be considered a little bit elevated, high, extremely high,
elevated.
Very elevated.
Yes. If that was real, that would be getting up towards the range where it's smoking and lung cancer. Smoking a pack a day for 20 years is about 10.
The December analysis found a relative risk of 11.35 for autism. Our own Centers for Disease Control had just figured out the cause.
Silver Stratton took this information to his colleagues, rather concerned, and said, look what I found. And they worked with him to rerun the numbers. And basically what they started to do was stratify the data. So they started breaking the kids down into, say, birth cohorts. The more you stratify data and break it down into subgroups, the smaller the subgroups become, and you start to lose statistical power. They also started eliminating, they basically eliminated about half the children from the study using exclusion criteria. There are emails from Verstraten to his colleagues saying it just won't go away.
As you'll see, some of the relative risks increase over the categories, and I haven't yet found an alternative explanation. Please let me know if you can think of one.
So they reran the numbers using all these new criteria, and they ended up in the second generation with a relative risk of 2.48. They ran the numbers a third time. It just kept going down and down and down, and the signal kept going away, but it would not disappear.
We're protesting the amount of mercury that remains in vaccines to the denial of the CDC.
Speak directly to the CDC. What would you say?
Take the mercury out.
You have blood on your hands.
CDC is concerned about autism, and we are working hard to find the causes of autism and other developmental disabilities.
Tried that, reran, rethought, still the effect is there. And then another one will say it all came back, the effects of thimerosal.
So by the third generation, when we had this, I think it was 1.69 relative risk for autism, that was the data that was presented at Simpsonwood.
The CDC invited other federal agencies and pharmaceutical companies to a private two-day meeting at the Simpsonwood Conference Center about 45 minutes outside of Atlanta.
They wanted to convene an outside panel of experts in this area to try and review the findings so far that had been gleaned, to review the discussions that had taken place within CDC at that point.
By this time, the autism risk had been watered down to 1.69. But Verstraten had been finding a link between thimerosal and a whole array of developmental disorders.
I'm not even sure if they knew it was being recorded, but it was, and a transcript was made.
They took the extraordinary step of convening this external panel, which doesn't happen.
The transcript, we're quite adamant that this was a linear relationship, that they had a problem here.
There were neurodevelopmental specialists, there were pediatricians, there were biostatisticians, there was an epidemiologist, me.
Thomas Verstraten is quoted as saying, "Personally, I have three hypotheses. My first hypothesis is that it's parental bias. The children that are more likely to be vaccinated are more likely to be picked up and diagnosed. Second hypothesis, I don't know. There is a bias that I have not yet recognized, and nobody has yet told me about it. Third hypothesis, it's true. It's thimerosal."
Dr. Weil from American Academy of Pediatrics said you can play with it all you want. The results are real. They're statistically significant.
They're not unexpected.
Not unexpected. Other people like Dr. Clements from World Health Organization said, you know, we could have predicted this outcome before we did the study, and now we're left hanging. And
we should have never done the study.
Now,
other scientists were worried, not so much from a medical point of view, but from a legal point of view. They were worried about lawsuits. They were worried about people suing the drug companies.
There was enough evidence there.
Toward the end of discussions, the participants were asked to vote on a scale of 1 to 6 how serious they felt these findings were.
Most of the people who did vote voted 1 or 2. In other words, not very serious. Of course, they were members of the public health establishment with a big vested interest in the vaccine program.
One of those who voted a 1 was the chair of the panel himself.
I remember the chair of the panel's grandson being born, or the announcement happening, literally as we were in the middle of discussions.
Stood up and said that earlier that morning he had been called out into the hall because his first male grandson had just been born, and there was no way that they were going to vaccinate that baby with thimerosal.
Sir, would you all raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Seated.
I was chairman of the Government Reform and Oversight Committee
And we did about 4 years of investigation into vaccines. I had scientists come from all over the world and doctors from all over the world to discuss it before my committee. And that's how we came to the conclusions we did.
If there's any question whatsoever about mercury and vaccine, if there's even a question, why in the world are you continuing to immunize kids with something that's questionable? You can't give me an answer. I don't understand it.
To date, you know, we have no evidence, convincing evidence, of harm from the thimerosal.
I know, Doctor.
Because in vaccines.
No, I'm going to yield. Doctor, I understand. You said that, and I understand that.
Here was Congressman Burton from the Government Reform Committee as the chairperson investigating the issue of thimerosal in medicine, and they didn't tell the committee anything. Can you imagine what that was like? One day, they're behind closed doors. We found all these effects. Oh, my God, what are we going to do about it? Next day, testify before Congress. No links, no data. We need to do studies in the future.
Everything's fine.
If he had told the truth and pulled out from Simpsonwood a draft of that study, just think of how many thousands, probably tens of thousands of children would have been spared.
When we had our hearings, we had somebody from the FDA testifying. And I said, my grandson got 7 shots with mercury in them. And became autistic very soon, very shortly. And he said, well, there's no evidence that that caused it. And I said, would you like for me to give you the content that was in there of mercury, 7 shots full? Would you let me shoot that into your arm? And he looked at me like he was shot and said, well, no. And I said, well, why? If it's all right for my grandson to get 7 shots with mercury in it, why is it not all right for you to take 1 shot with the same amount of mercury that he got?
No more mercury! No more mercury! No more mercury!
I'm here today because of my 5-year-old twins. Robert David.
We know what happened at Simpsonwood. We're here because we need more people to come out and talk about Simpsonwood.
Just fix my kids! Just make them whole!
Hey, hey! Mercury has got to go!
Physically, I was destroyed. But psychologically, I was walking a tightrope of losing every sense of reality I had ever known in my life.
I would tell my friends about it, and they just thought he was crazy.
Within a week of getting that shot, I developed an almost constant feeling of being nervous. As the days went by, my intelligence seemed to increase substantially. I became like a machine at work and could grasp and figure out very complex problems instantly. I knew there was some crazy stuff going on in my head. So at first I would spend hours and hours just sitting in my room exploring it. I could close my eyes and see images of characters and places, and I was able to create and live out my own fantasies. But the fantasies soon turned into a nightmare I couldn't get out of. The sicker I got, the more I could feel the inflammation stimulating my brain, and the deeper I went into what seemed like a different plane of existence. I developed such severe anxiety and ADD that it was almost impossible for me to sit still, and my behavior became so erratic that people would ask me if I was on drugs. I was so scared of what was going on in my brain that I wanted to check myself into a mental hospital many times. But I knew that would take away the one and only option I still had to end this nightmare instantly.
Kayleen is a friend of mine. She had Dalton very premature. I think he was 26 weeks when he was born. He was born 1 pound, 14 ounces. And within that first week of his life, he was given hepatitis B loaded with thimerosal.
I questioned it just because I was like, oh, don't hurt my poor little 1-pound baby. Then we got all the vaccines at 18 months, and he stopped sleeping. He started screaming all day long. He'd bite me till I'd bleed. I just, like, out of nowhere, he would just start banging his head on the walls. He'd have these tantrums where I would have to sit on top of him just to calm him down because he'd be out of control.
You can do it. I know you can.
Many children with autism have aggressive behavior, insomnia, severe seizures, skin rashes, ear infection after ear infection, major immune system dysfunction. They have gastrointestinal issues, severe constipation, food allergies, systemic yeast infections, sensitivity to light, sound, and touch.
I don't know if he's sick or how he's feeling because he can't tell me. And the UCLA doctors told me he just needs to be on antipsychotic medicine because he has autism.
1 month after the Simpsonwood conference, Thomas Verstraeten sent an email to voice his frustrations over the pressure he was under to reduce the relative risks. I do not wish to be the advocate of the anti-vaccine lobby and sound like being convinced that thimerosal is or was harmful, but at least I feel we should use sound scientific argumentation and not let our standards be dictated by our desire to disprove an unpleasant theory.
That was basically the end of Verstraeten's tenure at CDC. Once he said that, he was doomed.
Then a year later, the fourth generation was presented at the Institute of Medicine committee meeting that was held in 2001. There were two IOM meetings on vaccines.
The Institute of Medicine, known as the IOM, was paid by the CDC to perform two separate reviews of the evidence in relation to vaccines and autism. The first was the 2001 IOM, and by this time, Verstraeten's fourth generation showed a relative risk for autism that had once again been lowered, this time to 1.52.
When Verstraeten presented his data that morning at the IOM, he said, "As of 8 o'clock this morning, I no longer work for the CDC. I am now an employee of GlaxoSmithKline, and I'll be going back to Belgium to work for their Brussels office." Well, Glaxo, of course, is a vaccine maker, uses thimerosal, and is a defendant in a lot of lawsuits.
The 2001 IOM concluded the link between autism and thimerosal is biologically plausible. They emphasized the need to perform biological and clinical science.
After the IOM 01 report that found biologic plausibility, the trial lawyers came out of the woodwork and were filing class actions in civil court and were kind of gearing up the whole litigation machinery to go after industry. And Eli Lilly came along with a rider, Homeland Security Act, that would have given the vaccine companies permanent immunity from suit.
10 years ago, it was 1 in 10,000. Now it's 1 in 250. A 40-fold increase in 10 years. And we had the audacity to take the only tool that these parents had out of their hands to sue the pharmaceutical companies that manufactured that.
Dan Burton was, of course, furious, and he tried to stop it on the House side, but it was too late at that point. It did pass.
And when it came time to vote in the Senate side, they could either vote down the Homeland Security bill or vote it in with this rider from the House, and that's what they did. They voted it in.
Had I been notified, I would have been down here on the floor debating it very stringently because we've been studying this issue for 3 years.
Initially, a lot of people thought that Bill Frist had inserted this rider. He was the Senate Majority Leader, Republican at the time.
Bill Frist had major ties to Eli Lilly and had previously attempted to protect them from these lawsuits.
Frist said, "No, it didn't come from me. You might want to check with the White House."
Before becoming vice president under Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr. was a director on the board of Eli Lilly. His vice president's family owned controlling interest in Eli Lilly, who was a major contributor to the Bush-Quayle campaign for the presidency. It was this administration that would over double the amount of thimerosal children were being exposed to in their vaccines. His son George W. Bush's current budget director was Mitch Daniels, who was vice president of Eli Lilly. Sidney Terrell, Eli Lilly's current CEO at the time of the Lilly rider, just so happened to be a member of George W. Bush's Homeland Security Advisory Council.
And the White House said, "No, it wasn't us. We think it may have come from Senator Frist."
The parent community just erupted in a unified sense of outrage.
Those of us who understood what that meant organized a letter-writing campaign, a faxing campaign, emails, phone calls into Congress, and as one person described it, brought the Senate to its knees.
In January, in a technical amendments bill, it was taken out. So it was it is still remembered on the Hill as one of the few times when a public outcry has forced an abrupt reversal on such a sleazy rider.
Congressman Dick Armey finally admitted that he did it. He was quoted as saying, "I did it, and I'm proud of it."
"Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we."
The CDC would perform one final generation of the Verstraeten study, this time without Verstraeten.
And then they got the brilliant idea. Don't have a reference group that has no mercury. Make a reference group that has some mercury. And don't take the ones who got the maximum mercury as your exposed group to compare against. Take ones who have a little less. In other words, take the extremes and drive them towards the middle. And the closer you get to the middle, the smaller the relative risks.
That's what they published.
And that's what they ultimately published.
You weren't involved in Verstraeten in 2003 at all, were you?
No.
He laughs. Yes.
That was a circus. That was a total circus.
How would it be possible for this to go through, from 7.62 to the next analysis, 2.48, to the next analysis, 1.69, to the next analysis, 1.52, and then down to 1?
I don't know how this happened. It's startling. It does suggest to me that I probably wouldn't want to take too seriously any of the numbers.
The CDC coincidentally lost Oliver Stratton's original raw data, so this study can never be replicated by an outside source.
When you have a protocol and you get data, and then you don't like the data you got, so then you go back and change the rules, that's just not cricket. That's fraud in anybody's book.
2003 would flash us back in time to when tobacco companies were paying big money to prove their cigarettes were not causing lung cancer.
The babies born from women who smoke are smaller, but they're just as healthy as the babies born from women who do not smoke.
What about the higher
rate? And some women would prefer having smaller babies.
This time, however, the CDC would spend millions of our tax dollars desperately trying to prove their thimerosal was not causing autism.
None of the things which have been found in tobacco smoke are at concentrations which can be considered harmful.
Small quantities of toxins really need to be there in larger quantities for them to be dangerous.
But the components themselves can be considered harmful, can they not?
Anything can be considered harmful. Applesauce is harmful if you get too much of it.
Water, for example. I mean, if I drank 2 gallons of water without replacing the sodium or the specifically other minerals that are there, I can lower my serum sodium enough so that I would have a seizure. Does that mean that water is a neurotoxin? No.
I don't think many people are dying from applesauce.
They're not eating that much.
You're telling us that there is no link. Is that correct?
I am saying that the science to date,
the existing data do not demonstrate a causal relationship between vaccines and autism.
There is no causal link. I am not a scientist, Mr. Waxman, and that is why doctors asked or scientists asked to participate here this morning to perhaps answer in greater depth the questions that you raised.
I'm glad we're having this hearing today on autism. We still have many questions about autism. What causes it? What are the safest and most effective treatments? Is there a way to prevent it? How many people in the country suffer from autism?
If mercury in the vaccines caused autism, why don't all the children have autism? Just like if cigarette smoking causes lung cancer, why doesn't everybody get lung cancer who smokes? The answer is susceptibility.
Desperate to exonerate thimerosal, the CDC would orchestrate 4 more studies in collaboration with researchers from other countries. Their primary focus was on Denmark, where they would conclude and widely report that autism rates continued to rise even after thimerosal was removed from their vaccines by 1992. But the CDC knew exactly why the rates had risen.
Confounding factors made it completely impossible to look at thimerosal removal and autism incidence in Denmark.
Shortly after thimerosal was removed, Denmark changed their autism diagnosing criteria, increasing the rates. Then they began adding to the rates all children who had been diagnosed outside of a hospital, which account for the majority of cases nationwide, easily explaining why the autism rates went up after thimerosal was removed. But once these changes stabilized, the rates started going down. And the CDC knew this.
Yet somehow, through a wave of a magic wand, thimerosal was absolved at the very, very end of the article.
Their conclusions put many countries at ease by reassuring them thimerosal was not to blame. The principal investigator and co-author on one of the studies is now living in Denmark as a wanted fugitive for stealing over $1 million from the CDC.
So all of a sudden you had 5 published epidemiological studies showing no link between mercury and autism. What does the CDC do in December of 2003? It calls on the IOM to suddenly, quickly, without warning, hold a special meeting of the IOM Vaccine Safety Committee meeting on February 9th, 2004.
The CDC had completely ignored the 2001 IOM panel's recommendation for biological and clinical science.
I always said the cells and molecules don't lie, but you know what? Numbers can lie. Epidemiological studies can be designed to come out with an answer that you want.
On January 15th of this year, I wrote Dr. Julie Gerberding, the director of CDC, and I asked her to postpone the February 9th Institute of Medicine meeting.
There was work being done on the other side, on the biomedical side, on the biological side, but none of that had yet been published.
I said, pressing forward with this meeting at this time, I believe, will further undermine the credibility of the Center for Disease Control on matters of vaccine safety and do damage to the reputation of the Institute of Medicine.
So it's not even possible to do an epidemiology study of any sort that could rule thimerosal out.
Absolutely, for all time, you can't do a study that, an epidemiologic study, that would rule out almost anything.
Yet the prestigious Institute of Medicine came to the conclusion that these studies definitively rule out thimerosal as the cause of autism. Studies that all have fatal flaws and are in no way even designed to rule thimerosal out.
What is perhaps the greatest outrage, it goes further to call for the halt of further research.
We never say, like the IOM, no further study should ever be done. If you ever read that in Science, by the way, you know there's a problem.
The only reason you'd want to close research is that you might fear what you would find.
And that's how we ended up with the famous May 2004 IOM report, which has affected this debate ever since.
It was now May 2004, 4 months after getting that tetanus shot, and I was researching obsessively.
He spent hours and hours and hours and hours on the internet researching some of this stuff. In fact, I thought that was probably a sign of something wrong right there.
I rush ordered a book about mercury poisoning that was written by Dr. Andrew Cutler, who had a PhD in chemistry from Princeton. This book was my first hint of hope that I could recover from what I was going through.
You got to find a chelator for mercury that goes into the brain and then figure out how much to take and how often. Alpha-lipoic acid was an available material that would do this, and it needed to be given every 3 or 4 hours.
Removing the mercury from my brain was a very slow and scary process. But gradually, I started to notice certain symptoms were no longer there. And week by week, there were less and less. Within a few months of sticking to Cutler's protocol, I was able to go back to work. And by January, my symptoms were almost completely gone.
You know, the government really has a position that thimerosal is not bad for you. It's not bad for you. It's not bad for you. It's not bad for you.
When I had fully recovered, I would hear these words all over the news. I thought I must just be the one in a million that thimerosal can harm. But as time went by, the more curious I became. If I was a full-grown man when I got destroyed by the amount of mercury in a single vaccine, what could happen to a tiny baby getting 3 of these shots in one day? The science became my new obsession.
And then we had this peculiar decision to increase the recommended coverage for the flu shot.
Just 10 days after the IOM report, the CDC responded by publishing their recommendation that all babies start getting thimerosal-loaded flu shots, also recommending all pregnant women get this shot.
Common sense and also all good science suggests that exposures in utero to these, you know, tiny growing fetuses is catastrophic.
Did you get your flu shot?
I did.
We did.
I did.
I did.
Thimerosal was not removed from flu shots because it was not a routine childhood vaccine when the joint statement was made in 1999. Now, after 5 years of trying to cover their tracks, and just as the backstock of other thimerosal-loaded vaccines had finally run out, the CDC had taken it upon themselves to add thimerosal-loaded flu shots to the childhood vaccine schedule. But this was far worse.
Should I really be getting a shot? I mean, is it safe?
Yes. Last year, I had a pregnant patient that did not get vaccinated. She ended up getting very sick from the flu and had to be hospitalized.
Oh, that's terrible.
How can they recommend thimerosal-containing vaccines to pregnant women now?
I don't know why they still give it to pregnant women. Like, that's the last person I would give mercury to.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly, if you look at who's more likely to be at risk, you can argue reasonably that the developing fetus, because, you know, the brain is still developing and all the organs are still developing, is more likely to be susceptible to the effects of mercury than is somebody who's already born and getting older.
The FDA had issued an advisory to pregnant women 3 years earlier in 2001, warning them not to eat certain types of fish because of the dangers of mercury on the developing fetus.
Giving it to a pregnant mother when they're telling them not to eat fish that has mercury in them, it's crazy. It's just crazy. We're seeing a whole new round of autism right now, and I'm connecting that with a flu shot.
particularly in gestational time.
Dr. Heiko Langner at the University of Montana tested the amount of mercury in flu shots given to pregnant women. The results confirmed the flu shot contained 25 micrograms per dose when the bottle was shaken. But when left to sit for 20 minutes and not shaken, the dose contained 27 micrograms.
If the doctor doesn't shake the bottle up or the nurse doesn't shake it, the person getting it at the end could be getting 40 or 50 micrograms if they're with the 8th, 9th, or 10th vaccine in that bottle.
Flu shots have never been tested on pregnant women. The manufacturer's own product insert that comes with a flu shot clearly states, animal reproduction studies have not been conducted with Fluzone. It is also not known whether Fluzone can cause fetal harm when administered to a pregnant woman or can affect reproduction capacity. Fluzone should be given to a pregnant woman only if clearly needed. Yet the CDC somehow recommends all pregnant women get these shots.
If you read the flu vaccine drug insert, you'll see all the makers say this, that we don't know whether flu shot is harmful to the pregnancy. We don't know if it's harmful to the fetus. We don't know if it can cause birth defects. And that's an outright lie. And there's been three animal studies where they looked at the effect of thimerosal on developing fetuses for animals. All three studies show increase the dose of thimerosal, you increase the abortion rate. It kills fetuses.
Thimerosal is also known to be more toxic to males than females. A study exposing mice to increasing levels of thimerosal found that all of the male mice died before even the first female mouse died.
I was 6.5 months pregnant with twins and a boy and a girl. I went in for a routine exam, and at the end of the exam, as I was about to leave, my doctor said, you know, I really would like you to stop by the nurse's station and get a flu shot. I told him that I was not comfortable getting the shot. I didn't want to get it. And he was very adamant and even went as far as to say that he thought I was being selfish. Against my better judgment, I went ahead and let them give me the shot. Within, I would say, 5 to 6 hours after the shot, I started getting severe cramps and bleeding, and I knew something was very terribly wrong. And I immediately went back to the hospital where my doctor was, and he said, you are having a miscarriage. I lost my son, and my daughter ended up at 18 months diagnosed with severe autism. She regressed in my womb. My doctor was so horrified by what happened. He said, I'm not giving any more flu shots to pregnant women. I had her baby teeth analyzed. And baby teeth form in the womb. You know, they come out later, but they form in the womb. Her baby teeth had tons of mercury in them.
Listen to our government agencies. These guys are telling the truth. You know, there's no conspiracy here, folks. Just right. Get your damn vaccine.
Ignoring the 2004 IOM report that said no further funding should be spent on thimerosal, the CDC would spend millions of our tax dollars on yet more epidemiology studies. This time to use as ammunition against the families in the omnibus autism proceeding. This proceeding consisted of government lawyers representing a government agency, presenting government-funded science to government judges, the biggest kangaroo court of all time.
Hazmat crews worked quickly to clean up a small amount of mercury Friday.
Everyone was freaking out.
Firefighters say a teacher and a student noticed a small trace of mercury in a water fountain and called 911.
Schools are shut down, and hazmat is called in if even a thermometer breaks or any time mercury is spilled. Yet these same schools are turned into flu shot clinics that are injecting the same substance directly into every child's body.
This is not an issue anymore. This is getting to be, you know, something out of science fiction.
CDC has dug in so far, they can't back out. Because them to say now, oops, we're sorry, I think the public would be very unforgiving.
Many accused the CDC of acting like a lawless maverick with their vaccine program, somehow thinking they could make up their own rules as they went, completely disregarding any federal exposure guidelines, disregarding all required safety testing, disregarding warnings and product safety data sheets, disregarding study after study showing how toxic thimerosal is, and worst of all, disregarding a very similar mercury tragedy of the past.
There was this very interesting disease called pink disease acrodynia in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and eventually scientific consensus came about that it was caused by inorganic mercury in teething powder. And interestingly, only 1 in 500 children exposed to the mercury develop pink disease, which again strongly suggests a genetic susceptibility.
Acridinia, otherwise known as pink disease, became more prevalent as the teething powder became more commercial.
There's descriptions of kids with pink disease rocking back and forth and banging their heads and not playing with the other kids and losing eye contact and having insomnia and not wanting to eat and many of the things that we see in autism. And if you look at the literature, you know, mercury can do these things.
A study published in 2001 compared all known symptoms of mercury poisoning to all of the known symptoms of autism.
You can line them up line for line, word for word, and mercury poisoning looks exactly like autism.
A study out of Australia showed that 1 in 25 grandchildren of acridemia victims had autism compared to the general population at 1 in 160, strongly suggesting a genetic susceptibility to mercury.
So pink disease was inorganic mercury rubbed into the skin or the gums in kids who were roughly, I don't know, 6 months to a year of age, whereas the theory with autism is it's ethyl mercury injected directly into newborn babies or pregnant women.
When you got sick the second time, what did you think was going on?
I didn't know why I was sick again. I was pretty much in a desperate state. I knew all my symptoms had come back. My doctor in California kept asking me, you know, did you get a flu shot? Did you get any type of vaccine? And, you know, he was actually started talking about other sources. All of a sudden, he asked me if I had been exposed to any broken fluorescent light tubes.
If you break one, there's mercury in it. I'm taking all those light bulbs out of my house. In fact, I want to introduce a bill to get mercury out of those light bulbs or get those light bulbs out of America.
I was working at my job and in a demolition area, and I was talking to one of my engineers, and I look over and I saw somebody sweeping up three or four of those broken, you know, those 4 foot fluorescent light tubes that had been shattered. And if I had taken 5 seconds to look online and figure out that it's mercury vapors in those, I knew that there was a mercury link to those bulbs. But I thought, you know, you'd have to touch it to be exposed. I remember looking over at those bulbs, and I had the thought in my head, you know, well, we'll see if I get sick again.
I've seen a lot of people throw these in the trash. And I sure as heck wouldn't want to be working around that.
I was so focused on the word thimerosal that I left myself vulnerable, and here I was sick again because of something else besides thimerosal. A year after recovering from the tetanus shot, all of my symptoms had come back with a vengeance. I had already recovered from this once, so I knew I could do it again.
I brought him home 3 months after that second exposure. And his physical state was the lowest it had ever been.
This time my symptoms were not slowly disappearing like they had before. They were only getting worse.
He was in total distress. I think that was his very lowest point too. I think at that point in time I just recognized something with him that he was to the point of no return.
I was searching for stuff to give him a reason to hang around.
The CDC's focus remains solely where their liability rests. But mercury is a cumulative poison, meaning you must account for all sources of exposure or you will be grossly underestimating the risks.
You've got over 1,000 tons of mercury out there in people's mouths in the United States. It's the largest repository of mercury anywhere, is what people are walking around with in their mouths.
We're going to take the coffee pot that hasn't been used in a long time, and we're just going to place the amalgam in here, say, for 10 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then we're going to dry it off so people can't say that it's water vapor. And we're going to place this now. Now, just what happens when you take a drink of hot coffee and you run it across your amalgam, so you release a little bit more mercury.
The mercury levels in the fetus that are born to a woman with amalgams will have higher tissue levels of mercury than the mother, from the mother's fillings.
New research suggests the placenta removes mercury from the mother's bloodstream and concentrates the mercury in the fetus.
people used to joke, it's kind of a macabre joke, but if a woman is mercury toxic, one of the most effective ways for her to detoxify is to have a baby, because the baby will draw a lot of that mercury out of her.
Just like an individual person accumulates mercury as they age, the industrial world is accumulating mercury as it ages.
There are over 600 coal-fired power plants in the United States that release over 50 tons of elemental mercury into the atmosphere each year.
They burn coal to generate electricity, and when they're burning the coal, the natural mercury within the coal gets released into the environment.
Dr. Raymond Palmer found that for each 1,000 pounds of mercury released into the environment, there was a 61% increase in the rate of autism.
So there's this global pool of mercury, of elemental mercury, that's circling the globe, literally.
Rain eventually brings the mercury down to the surface of the Earth, where it builds up not only on the ground, but also in the streams and lakes and oceans. A 2008 study concluded that something in the rain is playing a strong role in the autism rates.
Once they enter a water body, they can get converted by bacteria from these elemental forms of mercury into an organic form of mercury called methylmercury.
Algae will absorb the methylmercury. Zooplankton then eats the algae, which is then eaten by a small fish, which is then eaten by a bigger fish, and then a bigger fish comes along. And then Joe Fisher, who is at the top of the food chain, feeds his pregnant wife and children all of this accumulated mercury. Another 100 tons of mercury is released in the United States each year from municipal waste incinerators, chlorine plants, mining, cement plants, steel mills, automobiles, furnaces, crematoriums, and others.
The projection is that by 2050, the world's mercury levels will almost double. And we're already at a very high level.
We are literally saturating the entire atmosphere and the planet we walk on with this incredible neurotoxin.
So once mercury's in the living environment,
an EPA study found that by 1999, 1 in 6 women of childbearing age had blood levels of mercury above what is known to cause neurological harm to a developing fetus.
You're not starting, in the case of thimerosal, from ground zero. You're starting with already a body burden. So maybe even a small dose could put you over the edge.
So that's not zero.
Well, 1, 2, you got mercury coming off your sweat, Shiloh.
It's mercury in the fluorescent light tubes. It's mercury in the thimerosal. It's mercury in the silver filling. It's mercury in the fish. It's mercury is the key word.
Mercury-containing vaccines may help, not harm kids, according to 2 new studies in the journal Pediatrics.
In 2010, the CDC would put their final nail in the coffin with an epidemiology study that claimed not only does thimerosal not cause autism, it actually protects children from autism, this time burying an 8.73 relative risk of autism in children exposed to thimerosal prenatally.
I have great shame now when I meet families with kids with autism because I have been part of the problem.
But when you look close enough, you see there is not even one real nail, and therefore nothing stopping you from lifting that lid and exposing everything those fake nails were meant to hide. There are 4 to 5 boys to every girl with autism, and studies have been published linking it to testosterone. But Boyd Haley would go beyond this and actually demonstrate why. When adding thimerosal to a petri dish of brain neurons, he found about 5% neuron death by 3 hours. When testosterone was added to a different petri dish, all of the neurons were still alive at 3 hours. But when he added testosterone with thimerosal, 100% of the neurons were dead. Testosterone makes mercury much more toxic. He did the same experiment with estrogen and found that it actually protected the neurons from mercury. Glutathione is the key component a child needs to excrete mercury, and researchers have identified specific genetic mutations in children with autism that slow down the normal activity of the exact pathways that just so happen to make glutathione. Dr. Jill James' research confirmed that autistic children have much lower levels of glutathione than typical children. Dr. Amy Holmes would provide the next piece of the puzzle, finding children with autism had much less mercury in their first baby haircuts, meaning they were not excreting it like typical children. She also found the lower the hair levels, the more severe the child's autism. Dr. Jeffrey Bradstreet would take it one step further by administering a chelating drug that binds to mercury and transports it out through the urine. Now all of a sudden, autistic children were dumping out mercury compared to typical children. A study by Dr. James Adams showed children with autism had over 2 times more mercury in their baby teeth. A study out of Harvard looking at brain samples found autistic brains had almost twice the amount of mercury. So a child's testosterone levels combined with their ability to excrete mercury clearly define the genetic susceptibility. But as the exposure levels go up, the environmental trigger becomes the master neurotoxin. Mercury forms a very strong bond with selenium, and when exposed, it can render useless specific selenoproteins that play a key role in maintaining a child's glutathione in its active state. This reduces a child's glutathione levels. Mercury also inhibits the enzyme HST, which is required to convert DHEA to sulfates. This forces more DHEA in the wrong direction and increases a child's testosterone levels, making the mercury much more toxic. Elevated testosterone then inhibits the CBS enzyme, reducing glutathione levels even further. So as the mercury levels increased in the vaccines, more and more children who were less and less susceptible became more susceptible and ended up poisoned. Dr. Jill James has since published the ultimate study, showing white blood cells of autistic children really are more susceptible to the toxic effects of thimerosal than those of typical children. But even more unbelievable, she was able to increase the susceptibility of the typical children's cells to match that of the autistic children's just by adding more thimerosal. Rain, silver fillings, the mother's age, coal plants, testosterone, genes, so many different studies all showing the link to autism, all happen to have a single common denominator. A study in 2004 exposing mice to thimerosal induced significant behavioral and neuropathologic effects very similar to what is seen in autism. Peruvian scientists in 2007 exposed infant hamsters to thimerosal at levels mimicking childhood vaccines and found severe brain injury in the exact areas of the brain implicated in autism. A study in 2010 exposing voles to mercury induced two of the hallmark characteristics of autism. Other studies performed on mice and rats and monkeys all found toxic effects on the brain and behavioral changes similar to autism. Sick voles, sick mice, sick hamsters, sick monkeys, sick children. But no need to worry. I'm sure the CDC is working on another epidemiology study. Walking backwards even further, you see that someone left their fingerprint at the scene of the crime. The exact year thimerosal was introduced into childhood vaccines is the exact year the oldest of the first 11 children ever diagnosed with autism was born. What else on this planet was introduced in 1931, increased in exposure around 1990, occurred in all 50 states at the same time, explains why some are born with it and others regress after vaccines, was given to children far beyond safety guidelines, yet remains undetected in blood, hair, and urine, affects boys more than girls, explains why some are more susceptible than others, induces animals into autism, caused a condition similar to autism in the past, explains the exact symptoms they have, explains the CDC's behavior, and explains what many think is impossible, the recovery of these kids.
That time of year again, time to start thinking about those flu shots.
Ooh. Also, there's a possible treatment for autism that some say is curing children.
Baxter Burley looks and acts like a normal six-year-old, because he is. That's why it's hard to imagine that at age three, he had full-blown autism.
The same regional center that gave him the diagnosis, the same group of people, reversed his diagnosis.
Something else that reversed, the amount of mercury in his system. It went from a high level of 13 to what's considered almost negligible, 0.5.
No longer considered autistic.
No longer considered autistic. That was a big day. We actually call it the day he lost his diagnosis. We call his second birthday.
We see children that come through that are severely autistic and, you know, within a year they're mainstreamed in school and out of the spectrum. Some children turn around in a number of months, other children take years.
We started with the special diet. We started with lots of supplementation geared at healing his body, helping his body detox from the heavy metal exposure he had. We did chelation, methyl B12 injections. We rented a hyperbaric oxygen chamber for our house.
The self-stimulatory behaviors that we saw so much of are all gone.
He's not covering up his ears. We went from the baby who had no language and no social interaction and was lost in his own world to a child who is very verbal and very social. He's very much engaged in relationships with everybody in the family. Quinn has a best friend. He wants to see his friend every day.
Wants to see him.
Are you filming a movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're following me everywhere!
He'll say, you know, when I had autism and then talk about something that we weren't aware of how he was feeling.
Imagine what could have been done to recover these children starting clear back in 1999. When the CDC first realized what was causing autism. Over 12 years later, they continued to tell the same old story.
CDC is not certain how much...
While there's no simple explanation for the increase...
...due to changes in the definition of autism or an improved recognition...
...and increased recognition.
And even though some doctors are recovering these kids, the CDC continues to waste even more critical time by turning a blind eye to it. How much longer will we allow those who have caused this epidemic to be in charge of solving it?
It's a puzzle, and we're putting all the pieces of the puzzle together that way.
We're sending thimerosal-containing vaccines all over the world.
They're taking it out of children's vaccines here in America, but they're still putting it in vaccines they're sending to third world countries. So my colleagues, if you're concerned about Africa and India...
13 years after the AAP's joint statement to remove thimerosal as soon as possible for U.S. children, the AAP and the World Health Organization convinced the United Nations not to remove thimerosal in vaccines for developing countries, reassuring the delegates of these countries there is nothing to worry about.
They were like giving us guarantee to be rest assured. There's been no case of adverse effect reported in any part of the world.
They dislike us enough without them finding out that they're now getting more autistic children. But I'm afraid that's a real, real possibility.
You can lose a whole generation from mercury. So why should they accept to have it introduced in the vaccine?
What's your response to people who are just going to blow you off as being anti-vaccine?
This has never had anything to do with being anti-vaccine. You know, I'm not anti-light bulb. I'm not anti-putting fillings in your mouth. I'm not anti-fish. I mean, this has nothing to do with being anti-anything other than not exposing people to mercury. The only reason we're using mercury in any product is strictly for money reasons, and that's it.
Julie Gerberding, who was the director of the CDC, went on to become president of Merck's $5 billion a year vaccine division. Eli Lilly went on to make billions of dollars by inventing Prozac for depression and Strattera for ADD. Depression and ADD are two of the most fundamental symptoms of mercury exposure. Genius. Baseline exposures to mercury continue to increase exponentially, while the CDC continues to push flu shots on pregnant women like never before, with yet another epidemiology study.
Women who had the flu while they were pregnant were more likely to have a child later diagnosed with autism. So the question is, if you're pregnant, can you, should you get a flu shot?
Yes, yes, yes. And I would say it now goes beyond that. If you are a woman of childbearing age, if you think you're going to get pregnant or want to get pregnant, could get pregnant, yes, do it.
Get your flu shots to protect your baby from autism.
Get your flu shot now.
All right, doctor's orders.
In 2009 and 2010, pregnant women were given a second mercury-loaded shot for the swine flu. This has never been done before. Yet the CDC likes to claim mercury was removed and the autism rates keep going up.
They removed mercury from all vaccines and they're still seeing autism rates on the rise. Can you explain this for us?
They forgot to mention the latest autism rate is based on children born clear back in 2002. Those who received the backstock of thimerosal vaccines and then got flu shots starting in 2004.
There is no mercury in the routine schedule of childhood vaccines anymore, except maybe just trace amounts. Trace amounts.
There is biologic plausibility right now. I really do believe there is, to say that thimerosal causes autism-like features.
By September of 2006, I had been sick for so long that I no longer knew what it was like to feel normal. I remember the exact moment that I finally realized I wasn't going to get any better. This was the day I decided to buy this video camera to tell a story that I'm hoping inspires the public to be part of the solution. If you choose to get a vaccine, you can request one without thimerosal. You can choose an LED instead of a fluorescent light bulb. You can choose a filling for your cavity that does not contain mercury. You can push your local power plants to use mercury filtration systems.
I will not back down from protecting our kids from mercury poisoning.
And most importantly, you can write the president and ask him to make good on his promise by issuing an executive order for the immediate and responsible removal of thimerosal and vaccines. No matter what has happened in the past, we must all understand that it's not too late to fix.
We'll be right back.
And after days and months and even years of going after the science and trying to get myself better, the exact thing I had set out to do that September day was finally finished. And by this time, so was my sickness.
Thank you for watching day 8 of our 9-part series. So we're building all this momentum, driving into our last day, day 9, which is tomorrow. And tomorrow is going to be a huge day. We have part 3 of my interview with Sayer G. We also have part 4 of my interview with Dr. Brian Hooker. In addition, I'm very excited to introduce you to Doctors Jack and Heather Wolfson. Jack Wolfson is a board-certified cardiologist. Heather Wolfson is a chiropractor, and they make an incredible dynamic duo with a great message. One other interview you have to look forward to tomorrow is my interview with Dr. Dan Pompa. And why this one is so important is that Dr. Pompa talks about strategies for detoxing the cells of your system. He's a detox specialist, and he has worked with many vaccine-injured and vaccine-damaged people. And the detoxification process to get these poisons out of your system is critical. And he speaks very elegantly to that. So you have that to look forward to also. As I said earlier, today is day 8 of our 9-episode series. So time is running out, and I want you to choose either the silver or the gold package. During the series, it's 50% off. And this is content that you need to own. I want you to help support this effort, become a part of this movement, own this content, and let's together move forward, empowered to do the right things.